Your Money Matters on the air. Here are the numbers that matter. The markets hold down today, as you heard. Nationally, though, gas prices down. We're down nearly 40 cents in the last month. In Illinois, down a dime since last week. We're at a 5.15 across the state. Still 5.61 in Cook County, 4.45 in Wisconsin. Diesel down a nickel to 5.64 a gallon. Expectations for U.S. inflation 3 years ahead. That actually fell a little bit in June, and that should help the Fed in their arguments whether they're moving forward. But everyone is bracing for a possibly big inflation number this week. Well, the White House says that that data will be a little out of date since you've seen those gas prices going down recently. And according to Nielsen IQ, the inflation numbers for the grocery stores don't reflect just how much prices have gone up. Soft drinks up 14% in a year, coffee up 8% according to their data, and chocolate up 9.4%. That's too bad. It is July 11th. Those are the numbers that matter here on Your Money Matters. And I'm excited because it's Monday, and that means it's a Mesero Monday. And we bring in for a great conversation about what's happening to the markets and what people can do to figure out what's going to happen this second half of the year. Bob Martin, good to see you, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, you're a wealth advisor for Mesero, and I like when my airplane pilot has gray hair when I step on a plane. You don't have gray hair, but I would also like to know that if I'm giving care of my financial, my money to someone, it's a company that this is not the first bull market, this is not the first bear market they've seen. And certainly that is the case for Mesero.
Yeah, thank you. And look, Mesero's celebrating its 85th anniversary this year. The firm's been a part of Chicago for a long time. I can't guarantee you what's going to happen in markets going forward, but I can guarantee you that this won't be the last bear market we see. We've seen inflation. We've seen down markets. It'll happen again. So that's just part of investing.
You just know the ways to navigate it as best as we can. Let's just put it plainly. It was a bad first half of the year for stocks, wasn't it? And more than just stocks.
It was a real bad first year for stocks and the markets in general. And I think most of your listeners probably know what a poor start to the year it's been. What they may not realize is how uniquely poor of a start it's been. So over the first 6 months of the year, I think June 30th, stocks were down 20%. It's unpleasant. It's not all that unusual to see a 20% decline. You know, what is unusual is the rapidity of the decline. It's one of the fastest bear markets on record. We had another bear market in 2020, one of the worst 6 months periods on record, worst 6 months going back to 2008. The other thing that's sort of unique about this market is bonds were down too. Mm-hmm. So in your typical bear market, if we look back at 2020, if you look at 2008, your bonds provided some stability in your portfolio. That bonds rally, you saw a flight to quality, you saw a flight to treasuries, a flight to safety, that you had some ballast within your portfolio. Over the first 6 months of the year, the Bloomberg Barclays Aggregate Bond Index was down 10%. That's the worst start to the year for the index going back to its inception in the early 70s.
Whoa. So even that 60-40 balance isn't helping people out.
Yeah, exactly. So like your proverbial 60-40 balance portfolio really took it on the chin. So your balanced investor saw that 60-40 portfolio fall 17% in the first half of the year, which is the worst first half of the year for that portfolio going back to 1932.
Boy, anytime you cite that it's the worst since the 30s, that's never good because things were not all that great in 1932. But we do have mixed signals in the economy, right? Like that jobs report that came out Friday, boom, higher than expectations. Everything, you know, we talk about recession, but it would be unique to have a recession with employment numbers still so strong, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and look, I think mixed signals is what the story is here. So you look at what's happening, and you've got a lot of mixed signals in the economy. So you've got some signs that GDP and that growth is slowing. Some of that's from the action of the Fed and what the Fed's trying to accomplish here. So you've got inflation is the elephant in the room on the negative side, but at the same time, you have a lot of good underlying fundamentals. Consumption is still strong. Corporate investment remains strong. The job numbers, like you said, we had a really good report that came in ahead of what was expected on Friday. If you look at the job and labor turnover study, there's currently two job openings for every unemployed person. So if we look at recessions going back to World War II, every single recession was characterized by two things, one being a slowdown in economic activity and the other being an increase in joblessness. I mean, right now, we're just not seeing that in the job numbers.
Right. And it doesn't mean that we won't get there or that a recession isn't coming. But boy, if they were to like look backwards and say, let's say we had a recession, look backwards and say, when did it start? I don't know how you could ever say it started now when you get jobs numbers that are doing so well, but that's for another day. We're going to continue our conversation with Bob Martin. By the way, Mesirow, M-E-S-I-R-O-W, Mesirow.com, a great place to go for more information. But let's get a look at traffic and weather as well with Gabe Salgado. Your Money Matters here at 619 on 720 WGN. Bob Martin is a wealth advisor for Mesirow, and we've been talking about the current state of the economy. We do see oil prices coming down, which is certainly some good news, but we don't know quite yet where that inflation number's going. We thought maybe we had a peak, and then last month's numbers popped up a bit. Wednesday's report's a big number that's going to come out. We don't know what it is, but it's important.
Yeah, it's a big number, and it should be a big number both figuratively and literally. So, you know, we've seen some signs of inflation abating. Some of the freight numbers have come down. Lumber prices have come down. Oil has started to roll over. Some of the other commodities have. But this is a backward-looking number. This is going to be the number for June, and it's likely to come in pretty hot here. So we're likely to see another real big number. But then the hope is going forward that, you know, we'll start to see that number abate and soften a little bit here as we move towards the end of the year.
Right. And people say, well, gas prices have gone down. Why doesn't that show up? Well, the majority of the drop here has been the very tail end of June into July here. If you remember, the peak of prices for gasoline was June 14th. Right. So that'll be right in the middle of what this report is showing. And you can already see the White House kind of hedging themselves there a little bit. The Fed meets at the end of the month. I mean, as an advisor, obviously you're paying attention to all these things. Do we have to pay attention, or is that what we have you do? Right? Because I think that some of us get bogged down in all the minute details, and while it's important to know what's going on, sometimes maybe it's okay to tune away a little bit.
No, it's definitely okay to tune away a little bit. And look, it's helpful to be macro aware. Following the news is a good thing. It helps to be aware of what's going on. Obviously, with gas prices, we see that every day, right? We stop at the pump. We know what that is. That number is kind of smack in our face. But at the same point, if your investing process is built around trying to predict these macro trends, you're likely setting yourself up for failure. So make smart long-term decisions. Like I said in the intro, you're going to see these periods again. This won't be our last bout of inflation over the, you know, a lifetime of investing. It won't be our last bout of a bear market. So try to stick to your long-term plan and do, you know, smart long-term fundamental things.
We have texters a lot of times saying, but I just retired. I have a lot of anxiety right now. And I can totally understand why that would be the case. But as I'm sure you remind people too, your retirement is built for you to be there for 30 years, right? There, in your retirement, this probably will not be the last bear market that you see. There's ebbs and flows that will continue.
For sure. And I think you need to keep in mind that you can kind of segment your portfolio in your mind. So it's a difficult transition that you go from adding to that portfolio to taking from it. And you start to see that number get smaller and smaller, which is a difficult mental transition to make. And as you do that, it's helpful to segment that you've got a piece of that portfolio that's meant for your next month, your next six, your next 12 months to meet those short-term needs. But you also have a piece of your portfolio that may be meant for 10, 20, 30 years from now, that for someone retiring at 65, they may be looking at a 30 or 35-year retirement, and they should invest accordingly.
Yeah, it's a great point you bring up about that mental switch of seeing the number go down and what that can do to our behaviors and what we want. Okay, so you obviously help build plans and help families build wealth over time. We mentioned the bond market down. We mentioned the stock market down. I can imagine a lot of people throwing their hands up in the air and saying, well, there's nothing I can do. Are there opportunities out right now for people to make some money?
Yeah, absolutely. There's opportunities, and there's a couple pieces. So this looks a little different for someone who's in that accumulation phase, right? The investor who might be in their 30s, 40s, 50s, adding to their portfolio. And these down markets can really be good wealth accumulation events. That if you're investing a set amount of your paycheck every 2 weeks with your paycheck, you know, the dollars you're putting in, you're buying more shares today at lower prices. And it seems a little counterintuitive, but a lower, you know, the pullback in the market and the lower prices in the market should lead to higher expected returns in the future, that you're buying into lower expectations. So as the market recovers, as the economy grows, you're in a better spot in terms of where you're investing.
Yeah, with inflation at 8%, we should be thrilled that stock market prices are the only thing that's on sale right now. No, but I think you bring up a great point. So if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, stick with whatever plan you had that was working for you in the past. And even though it might give you sweaty hands to do so, that's an important thing to do.
Right.
All right. So what else is out there for people? Is there an allocation rebalancing people could do? I mean, what are you telling people that are maybe a little bit not in that acquisition phase.
Yeah, so there's a couple things you can look at here, and some of it may be looking at tax losses within the portfolio. So it's not the most fun way to make money, but it's a real way to make
right.
money. That if you have some opportunities, or maybe you can swap from a stock to a stock or a fund to a fund, and you get those losses on the book. There may also be a loser in your portfolio. I mean, something that's not working, and it's okay to throw in the towel. It's okay to say, hey, this didn't work out. I'm going to take this off the books, and I'm going to capture that loss. You can use those tax losses in your portfolio to offset capital gains within the portfolio. If you don't have those capital gains here in 2022, because what the market's doing, you can carry those forward and use them in future years to offset gains on your future tax bills. You can also use up to $3,000 of those losses a year to offset ordinary income.
Wait a second. You could roll over a loss?
So once you capture those losses in the portfolio, those stay on the book. Those are your losses to carry with you. So if you can use them this year, great. Offset those losses this year. If your gains this year don't equal to those losses will carry forward for as long as it need be to offset gains in the future.
I should have known
that. And that's money
that.
In your pocket.
I did not know that. That's interesting. So when you're saying like a stock-for-stock opportunity, you know, trade it while it's low. You've now netted, you've completed that trade, right? So you've lost that money. You can use that now to buy another one that you're not going to sell in the near future. You're going to let that grow at a lower price. And then you've labeled that low, or you've locked that low in, I guess you could say. What about diversification? Are you doing anything with accounts here or balancing that can maybe help people out at this point in time?
Yeah, and look, it's a good opportunity to rebalance as well. So you can look at what hasn't worked or what has worked within your portfolio, that maybe your allocations are off. You have a target of where you want to be. Again, we talked about having some portion of portfolio that's for the near term, some portion that's for the long term. If those risk assets have declined in value, you're below the allocation you want, this might be a time that you can step it up and get back towards that target allocation. There may also be some things that have worked in your portfolio. Now, there's not much that has worked so far this year, but energy is one of the few things that's done very well.
Yeah.
So maybe you have some energy stocks, you have energy sector exposure, that's up 30% year to date, and all of a sudden you have some outsized risk exposure within your portfolio. This may be a time to look at it, and again, with the long term in mind, say, am I where I want to be for the long term today?
When you were talking earlier about trying to time these macroeconomic things, I imagine you're also saying, don't try and time a bottom. Right? I think that's a guessing game, and people think, oh, we're down 20, 25%. Oh, we must be there. And not necessarily the case at all.
No, look, I think we don't know for sure. So sometimes these bottoms happen with a flurry. I mean, you see a massive selling, you see a rapid sell-off. Sometimes they're kind of ho-hum, and they just sort of happen, and the market starts to recover. So we don't know what it's going to be. I think predicting something over the next month, 3 months, 12 months is really difficult. What's going to drive the market in the short term? It's going to be sentiment. It's going to be those short-term changes in valuation. It might be, do we perform above or below what's the expectation for an earnings report? And those are things that are really difficult to consistently and reliably predict.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think it's also have a plan and you kind of stick with it. Invest, keep investing, stay invested, right?
Right.
Exactly. All right, tell you what, we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up in a bit. We're going to have more with Bob. We're going to talk about the retirees out there. I know there's so many of you right now who need some income. And that is a lot of our listeners right now. We're going to get into that in just a little bit. By the way, we're talking on a Mesirow Monday. MESIROW.com is the place to go to get started. Differentiated, diverse capabilities. They do a lot of great things at Mesirow. We're just getting started with Bob here, and we'll take your questions as well. First a break, then the news here on WGN. Here to help us to navigate through it on a Monday is it's a Mesirow Monday. Bob Martin, are continuing our conversation where people can, of course, what you guys do. For those just joining us, what is it that Mesirow does for families? If they're just hopping on and they've heard the name Mesirow, what makes you guys stand out?
So Mesirow is a Chicago-based company. We've been part of the Chicago community for 85 years. We work with families, individuals, across multiple generations typically. We serve as a wealth advisor. We like to be the quarterback for our clients. So we think of ourselves as being a mini family office, that we can be that quarterback that helps them with their long-term planning, their investments, their retirement planning, their needs, and be a consultant along with their tax planner, their estate planner, to give them a holistic wealth plan.
It's got to be a danger in Chicago to refer to yourselves as a quarterback, because I don't know if we're very familiar with what a quarterback is.
Yeah, hopefully we've been a little bit more successful at what we do than the Bears.
Yeah,
but, you know,
there you go. You can use that line wherever you want, by the way, even though I set you up for it. Let's talk about retirees. I get texts every day from people. Get them today. People that are like, what about me? I just retired. This is the year I just retired. I need some income. This is what I need. What do you tell people in this situation?
So we talked a little bit earlier about the clients that are in the accumulation phase, about investors who are still adding to their portfolio. And a lot of our clients and a lot of folks out there are in that distribution phase where they're drawing from their portfolio. And over the last few years in the zero interest rate environment that really dates back to 2008,
right,
savers and retirees have been punished, that there's been very little risk-free income available. So if there's an upside to higher interest rates here, it's that there is some income again available. If you look at just like a one-year treasury, the one-year treasury today, I think, closed at 2.90, 2.95.
Okay.
A year ago, that was less than a tenth of a percent. So, I mean, that's just a huge step up in the income that's available. And that's kind of a risk-free income stream. So you look at treasuries as being kind of the least risky investment asset out there. It's a secure government-backed income stream. You have a set certain maturity. So as the rate on that goes up, you see the rate on other investments go up as well. So as the treasury rate has increased, so too has the rates available on certificates of deposit, on municipal or corporate bonds and other income securities.
And you guys are able to easily navigate that. If someone says to you, hey, look, I want to kind of move things around a little bit, can you get some in this into securities? That's something that's navigable.
Sure. And look, I think a lot of it we talked about, you know, the idea that when you're in retirement, that a portion of your portfolio is there to meet your short-term needs, a portion of it's to meet your intermediate needs, and a portion of it's to meet your long-term needs. And to meet that short-term needs and not take risk, over the past few years, you've had to accept a zero return.
Right.
So whether that's sitting in cash in your savings or checking account, or even in your investment account, where your money market or secure bonds were paying very little, today you can have that money set aside where you can say, hey, I can set aside money for 6 months from now, and it's not a giant return, but earning 2 or 3% on money that you need 6 months from now is not a bad thing.
Is there a limit on how much you can buy in those types of securities?
Well, treasuries are about as liquid as you can get. So when you look at like certificates of deposit, right, there's FDIC limits. You don't want to exceed those. You want to stay within that. There's some other direct treasuries where there may be some limits. But if you're just buying a treasury bond, you want to buy a T-bill, you want to buy a T-note, you can buy those to your heart's content. They're as liquid as it can get.
Right, because I wanted to buy as much as I could in I-bonds, and then they told me no, that I had $10,000 per person.
Right. So yeah, the I-bonds are a nice little spot currently because they price off of inflation. So that inflation rate being high means that interest rate, at least over the next 6 months, is going to be pretty nice on those I-bonds. But you're limited to buying $10,000 a year.
Right, exactly. Let's talk a little bit about dividends, finding stocks that can pay you back. How are you guys able to navigate that world?
Sure. So if you step out, a little bit beyond the treasury world or the bond world, there's some opportunities in dividends. So when you think about income streams, and especially as you think about inflation, dividends are a growing income stream a lot of times. So if you look at just the S&P 500 right now, it yields maybe 1.5, 1.75%. It's not a huge yield, but over the past year, that yield's grown at 7%. Over the past 5 years, it's grown at 5% a year. There's also pockets of dividend growers within the S&P 500 where you're buying a growing income stream. And when you look there, I would encourage investors not just to look at the pure yield, right? I mean, you can look at that number. It's easy to Google. It's easy to look at on a stock. But it's important to also look at how secure is that dividend? What's the quality of that dividend? Is there growth behind it? Can the company continue to cover and grow that dividend over time?
What do you mean by buying a growing income stream? Are we just talking about the things we're talking about here? What does that term mean?
So the way I think of it is with a dividend. So when you buy, for example, a treasury bond, you're buying a treasury bond that has a set coupon and
okay,
it has a set maturity, and you're going to get that same coupon every 6 months until that bond matures. When you buy a dividend, whether it's through a fund, an ETF, or through an individual stock, there is an opportunity that the company can raise that dividend, whether it's quarterly, annually. And you see a lot of companies where that dividend is sort of sacrosanct and they seek to grow that income over time. So it's not just buying the income stream, but it's buying a stream of income that has some opportunity to appreciate and increase over time.
Perfect. When you talk about the assets that you can generate, there's a lot of numbers to look at a portfolio, right? I think a lot of people look at one number without breaking down what the allocations are and the importance of them. And that's something that you guys are able to do.
Right. And look, I think it's really helpful for investors to think about their portfolio in a total return context. So a lot of people want to look at and say, okay, if I have this set of assets and I put it in a treasury or I put it in a municipal bond, what income can I generate from this pool of assets that I have? But I think looking at it more holistically, look at it from a total return standpoint. So, non-dividend paying, non-income producing securities are probably a good piece, or can be a good piece at least, of a retiree's portfolio, even with like a non income-producing security, you can effectively create your own dividend by peeling off a piece of that security each year and selling a percentage of that to create your own dividend, your own payment off of that security. By looking at things in a total return aspect, too, you also have the opportunity to take advantage of the favorable tax rates on long-term capital gains. So if a capital gain on something you've sold that you held for more than a year is taxed at a capital gain tax rate that's lower than your ordinary income tax rate, whereas there are some income-producing securities and bonds where the income stream that's produced is taxed as ordinary income.
You explain this stuff so well, Bob. I really appreciate it. I imagine you do that with the clients, because clients walk in. Some people are so in tune to everything and know everything. A lot of people come to you saying, I need some help, and you're able to explain it both ways. After the break, we're going to talk about RMDs. I know a lot of people taking them for the first time this year. How does that work, and are they giving up more than they thought they would because the numbers are based on an old number? We'll get into all that. And also, we get a lot of questions on this show about Roth conversions. Mesro's number, 847-681-2300, 847-681-2300. This is Your Money Matters. Boy, does it. Trust it with the folks at Mesro. That's what I say here on this Mesro Monday. Bob Martin, continuing our conversation. A lot of folks, you know, we talk about recent retirees. This might also be their first foray into RMDs. Don't ignore them. You got to do it, right?
You absolutely have to. The penalty for not doing it is very punitive.
Like,
so you need to make sure you get it done.
Right?
Yes.
Like, that's no good.
Right.
So how does it work? I know that everyone should know, but it's based on what your account was at on the last day of last year?
Yeah, on your account value as of 12/31. So once you turn 72 with your traditional retirement account, so your 401k, your IRA, there's a set amount that the government requires you to take out of that account each year, and you pay taxes on the money when it comes out of that account. So starting at age 72, it's a little less than 4%, and it's based on an actuary table, so it steps up each year. So at like age 90, for example, it grows to about 8% of the account, and it's that percentage of the previous year's 12/31 value. So you need to take it. It's set for the year, regardless of what happens to the account. So those accounts may be down 20 or 30% here year to date, but you still need to take that amount by year end. You do have some flexibility. You have until year end to do it. You know, you can spread it out if you'd like. You can wait and see what happens with the account. You know, if you haven't started yet, you've got, you know, including July, 6 months left in the year. You could take 1/6 each month and spread it out over the remainder of the year. At the end of the year, that RMD is going to reset based on whatever the new value of the account is. So if things recover, that amount's going to be a little bit higher. If the markets stay where they're at, that amount may be a little bit lower next year. But each year, you're going to have that amount. You need to take it.
Yeah, I just want to like do a little quick math here for you, which is always trouble. Okay, so if it's $100,000 on December 31st of last year and you're required to take 5% out, you're going to give them $5,000, or you're going to take out $5,000 no matter what, even if the account, let's say, God forbid, was down at $60,000. So it would represent a much higher percentage now. That's worrying for people, isn't it? But I guess in many years, it's the opposite.
Yeah, in many years, it's the opposite, and it's significant. And just because you're taking that money out of the IRA, you do need to pay taxes. So you take out that $5,000, you're going to have some federal taxes due. The state of Illinois is nice there. It doesn't tax you on those IRA distributions. So you don't have to pay the state of Illinois. You do have to pay Uncle Sam. But once that money comes out, you don't need to spend it. You can reinvest that money in your taxable account. You can save it elsewhere and use it to grow outside the IRA, but that money does need to come out. You're not limited to that amount coming out. If you need more from that IRA, you can absolutely take more. Once you get to 59 and a half, that money is yours to take without penalty.
And Bob, you mentioned that the state of Illinois doesn't take any out. Anytime we discover a tax that the state of Illinois doesn't take out, we say it very quietly. So just whisper that next time so no one changes that policy. And this is a real dumb question. I know everyone probably knows this who already collects RMDs. You mentioned these actuary tables. Is it just based solely on age, or do they find out a little bit more about you like an insurance policy would? Or is it just a simple formula?
It's a simple year. If you turn 72 this year, you're required to take it for 2022. Each year thereafter, it changes based on that age of 73, 74, 75. That formula changes a little bit each year and increases the percent that you need to take out.
So if you lose a little weight or quit smoking, you don't get a reprieve?
They don't adjust your actuary or life expectancy.
A lot of questions I get here are about, is this a good time to convert my IRA into a Roth? Thoughts on people that want to consider doing that?
Yeah, so the reason you do this, the reason you'd convert your IRA to a Roth IRA is you're paying the taxes today, you're moving it to a Roth IRA where both the distributions in the future on the principal you put in and any growth comes out tax-free. So you can do that today. Your accounts may be down a little bit, so you have a smaller dollar amount that you'd be converting.
Right.
You're paying a tax bill on that amount you convert. So that amount of the conversion you're paying taxes on, if it's a little less today, you can get it over to the Roth IRA, and any future appreciation as the markets recover may grow from that point. You'll get it tax-free. There are some things to think about there. This is something that you likely want to talk to your accountant or your tax advisor about. You want to be careful about tax brackets. You know, taking that, you're going to move up your income for the year.
Right.
It may also impact some deductions. It may impact your qualification for financial aid if you have a student in college. So this isn't something to be done lightly. I'd encourage you to talk to your financial advisor, talk to your accountant before you do this. You have until year end. Don't wait to the last minute. That these things do take some time, but you have until year end to make that decision.
Is it all or nothing, or can you do some of it?
You can do some of it. You can do any amount. You can do a piece of it. You can do the entirety of your IRA assets.
Is there an income cap for people that can start a Roth IRA? I know that there is some limits in terms of people that can do it. Do you know anything about that? Or
so you can open the account at any income level. You can convert at any income level. For making a regular a Roth IRA contribution, there are some income limits. So
like a regular one out of your paycheck.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, if you have a Roth 401k, so through your employer, that you can do, you know, out of your paycheck. You can defer the full amount to your Roth 401k. It's a great option if your company allows it. If you have a Roth IRA, so held away from your employer, you can do $6,000 a year, an extra $1,000 if you're over 50 for the catch-up contribution. But there are limits there. It's I believe it's $208,000 a year. Don't quote me on that. Mm-hmm. But if where you start to phase out and then above that income, you're not eligible for a Roth IRA contribution.
That was about the number I thought as well. So I will not quote you on that. And last question about it is, if you're under the age of 59 and a half or whatever the time you'd be able to take it out penalty free, is there a penalty on a conversion or no? If you're switching it from traditional to Roth, you don't pay that 10% penalty, only the tax.
You do not pay that 10% penalty, only the tax. However, if you're under 59 and a half, once you do that conversion, that money needs to stay in that Roth IRA for 5 years before you take it out. That if you take it out before that 5 years, the IRS is going to come back and they're going to collect that 10% penalty on that amount that you converted.
5 years or till you're 59 and a half? Or like if I'm 58 and I do it, I have to wait till I'm 63?
That would be a question for your accountant.
That's a great answer. It's important information, all of it, and I just really appreciate you staying the whole hour, Bob, and breaking this down for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been great.
And you bury the lead, too. You used to appear on a college radio station with your buddies, didn't you?
Yeah, I was joking on the way in. I think this is my first time in a radio studio in 20-plus years, and the last time I was doing it, it was college rock radio, so a little different of a conversation.
Exactly. Bob, it's so great to chat with you. Mesereau's number, 847-681-2300, 847-681-2300. These people know what they're talking about, MESIROW.com. All right, let's take a break, then we'll wrap things up next here on Your Money Matters. Bob from Mesereau, again, the number, 847-681-2300.